Since its launch at the turn of the century, GFSI has become a catchphrase for food safety for the food industry. Recognized internationally by the food world, GFSI, the Global Food Safety Initiative, is accepted and even required by some as a hallmark of a company's food safety and quality management. In our last episode, we discussed how and why a company can begin its journey to GFSI certification. So in this episode, we move on down the road a bit to maintaining that certification, realizing that it's not a one and done, and it's not always as simple as it seems. I'm Lisa Lupo, your host of TAG Talks Food Safety. Today, we're again welcoming TAG's Senior Manager of Food Safety, Kate McGinnis, our in-house expert in GFSI. Good to have you back, Kate.
Thank you, Lisa.
So let's start with kind of a review for those who have not seen the first episode of our GFSI talks, which we do have linked in the description below. Can you give us a quick overview of what GFSI is and why it's important in the food industry?
Sure. So GFSI was developed and implemented to combat the differing regulatory requirements globally across the food manufacturing industry. So food safety standards differ from country to country, but the food industry is certainly a global network. So the food that we eat comes from all over the world. The GFSI standards were created to provide a globally recognized benchmark that can be applied and followed regardless of the regulation. So it really aims to provide a level playing field for food safety and manufacturing.
So, kind of as we said in the last episode, we brought companies into the world of GFSI and preparing for their initial certification audit. But once certified, the facility is still required to undergo successive audits to ensure that they're continuing to maintain high standards in food safety and quality management programs. So, how often, though, will these facilities get re-audited to ensure this is being done?
Right. So the re-audit schedule or frequency is typically based off of audit performance. So there are two different audit frequencies that are typical within the standards. The first option is certification to a GFSI standard with their requirement for a re-audit annually. And so this is certainly what most companies aim for, is this is sort of the target audit frequency. So this audit frequency is attained when certain scores or ratings are achieved in the current audit year. And so for something like SQF, this would be a score of 86 or above. And for BRC, this would be a grade of a B, an A, or a double A. And so this will yield you an annual audit cycle for your GFSI audits. And so typically when companies attain these scores, there's higher confidence that the company is maintaining those required food safety standards. The second option is to be put on a six-month audit frequency. And so for something like SQF, a score of 85 or lower results in that six-month audit frequency. And for BRC, it's a grade of a D or a C. And so with a grade of a D with BRC, this actually requires an additional visit at the 28-day mark to ensure that the non-conformances are being addressed and that there's actually suitable evidence of the corrective actions being implemented. So then once you get past that 28 days, then there's a requirement again to do a six-month full re-audit. And so the next audit date is based off of the initial audit date, not the certificate issue date.
Okay. So, but is that kind of grading system the same for the first certificate certification audit? So if I only get like a C or an 85 on that one, do I get my certification or do now you have to do something else to get the initial one?
Yeah, so the requirements are the same regardless of whether it's a first-time audit or your fifth audit. It's pass-fail
Okay.
graded criteria that changes. The only time this would ever change is if the standard itself makes changes to how it's grading the audit.
Okay. So as a facility, am I always aware of when I'm going to get that audit?
Yeah, so the standard will have an audit window within which your audit must be completed. Typically, this will occur. This is when your audit will occur. So generally speaking, you will know the time frame. So it's usually within a certain lead up to the time of your initial audit date. But GFSI has introduced the requirement that every 3 years, a facility has an unannounced audit. So basically,
Oh,
this
okay.
means that for 2 years, you will have an exact date that the auditor will be on site. You will be able to prepare for that audit. You will know when they will be there. For the first or for the third year, there will actually be an audit window assigned. And so during this time frame, the auditor can show up unannounced and the facility is expected to be ready for that audit. And so while you're provided with a window, the exact date is actually unknown. And so this switch has been made to add confidence about the site's ability to consistently maintain the standard requirements. And so there is less ability to plan well just prior to an audit with an unscheduled audit.
Okay. So given that the facility really needs to be audit ready at all times, I suppose it's kind of like being prepared for the FDA that can arrive at your door anytime for an unannounced inspection. So do you have any advice or suggestions on what a facility can do to really help ensure that an unscheduled arrival of a GFSI auditor isn't a really unwelcome surprise?
Absolutely. I always like starting by outlining the standard requirements that have, you know, a frequency associated with them. So I'll usually go through the standard and outline anything that has an annual, quarterly, monthly sort of frequency or any words that suggest there's some frequency that requires review. And I'll mark them out on something like a calendar or within a planning tool so that I know exactly when these things need to happen. And then this is sort of forms the outline of a plan to make sure that the requirements can be reviewed, completed, done, whatever is going to work best for you. But that's certainly something that I find helpful. I also like to go through the standard and look at the mandatory or fundamental sections. So these tend to be more crucial programs or elements in the standard. And I really focus on making sure they're fully implemented and meet the expectations. So really focusing on documentation and your records. These, again, should always be in good standing. Make sure that they're completed properly, that they're being verified accordingly, and really ensuring that your verifications are always complete and up to date. So you would hate to have an auditor show up and realize that you're really behind on that verification process. Additionally, completing things like regular GMP inspections to ensure that good manufacturing practices are being followed as per the requirement and the standard is certainly helpful. This allows you to really look at your programs on a regular basis and make sure that they're being implemented. And lastly, I certainly would suggest maintaining a robust internal program. So make sure that you're reviewing everything at least annually. Find those issues before the auditor has the opportunity to. Make sure that you can get them, you can find them, you can document it and close it out. So really follow through with those closeouts. Make sure you have no lingering nonconformances and show that they're being found and that there's follow through. Most auditors won't fault you if there is an area you're working on improvement, provided you can show a story and that there's progress being
made. Okay. So there's one area of complexity in audits that I've often heard mentioned, and that's kind of the variance between auditors. Right. So I know the standards provide for, you know, very little latitude in interpretation. One auditor might be more strict when observing a gray area of compliance where a previous auditor was more lenient. Or maybe there's a practice that a plant has been effectively using for years that one auditor says, yes, that's fine. And the next one comes in and says, no, that doesn't fit the specificity of the standards. So how can a facility plan for something like that? And can the facility question an auditor's interpretation or application of a standard?
Sure. So really a nonconformity should be assigned based on objective evidence against the requirement of the standard, and based on the level of the issue or the risk towards food safety. So this is a requirement within the specific standards. Okay. That being said, there's certainly variation in interpretation and what constitutes that required evidence. So as a food safety professional, we've certainly been shaped by our past experiences. And so one auditor's interpretation or audit style is certainly based on their understanding and experiences as well. And this can leave room for gray areas where one auditor is viewed as more stringent. And it may not always be that they're tougher per se, but perhaps they're auditing an area where they have far more experience than the previous auditor. And some auditors certainly have areas that they prefer to focus on. So the best thing I think a company can do is to meet the standard as it is written, because if you've met the standard as written, then at least you are meeting that criteria and have a starting point to discuss with if that comes up. So if there are differences in opinion, you are certainly allowed to discuss those with your auditor. They can't necessarily give you suggestions on how to fix it, But make sure that you're asking for that clarification. Ask them to point to you the specifics of the standard, why they're having issues finding compliance there. Because if they are going to issue you a nonconformance, you need to make sure that you fully understand why it's being issued and against what section, because you will be required to make an action plan for correcting the issue and from preventing it from happening again.
Okay. So while all the audits are, you know, kind of done against the standards, there can be some differences between that initial one and ongoing ones, partly because, you know, there's going to be expectations that you've made some corrective actions on any non-compliances. So although the auditor is required to explain the reason for a non-conformance, they're not permitted to provide suggestions, as you just alluded to, or advice for corrections. So how can the facility ensure that they are taking the right action so they're not docked for the same thing again in a later audit?
That's a great question, Lisa. An auditor will look at a previous audit report in preparation for the next audit. And there is an expectation in some of the standards now, specifically BRC, that all nonconformances will be completed and closed out and that they will not reoccur. And so BRC has actually implemented a new specific clause in the standard that now states all nonconformances from previous audits have been closed out and are not found to be occurring in the subsequent year.
Oh, wow, okay.
If occurring in the next audit and they are found to have the same issue, then a nonconformance can actually be issued against both the clause where the issue is identified and the clause where it states that there are no reoccurring issues. So it's a little bit of a double whammy if you fail to close out that nonconformance properly and they find it again. So to ensure that you don't find yourself in this situation, really look at the root cause of the issue. Ensure you're getting to the full root cause, and then implementing preventive measures to minimize the chances of it happening again. Root cause is certainly an area that companies tend to struggle with, and completing an in-depth root cause can really help to prevent reoccurrences.
Okay. So kind of sticking with talking about some auditors too, do they have specific geographic areas? You know, am I always going to get the same auditor, or could I even request like a certain auditor that I kind of liked?
Sure. So I suspect this probably depends on the specific certifying body that you're working with, but geographic area is less important than the categories an auditor is qualified to audit. So each standard has auditable categories that a company selects when they're going through their first audit that's related to the products they manufacture. And so the auditor must be qualified within that category to complete the audit. So this means that a qualified auditor could travel from any number of locations globally to a facility based on the scheduling and then the category criteria. I once had an auditor that was completing an audit for my facility in Ontario who was then flying to Egypt the next night for an audit. So, I mean, there is certainly variation in where they will travel to make sure that they're auditing against the criteria that they can audit with. So I think, you know, if there is somebody that's in your geographical area, there certainly is an effort to schedule with that auditor, but it's not always the case. And facilities can certainly request auditors. I've had some great auditors in the past that have been requested to come back in subsequent years, and they've usually made that happen. But I know that there is a cap on the frequency with which a facility can be audited by the same auditor, and you're limited to 3 consecutive auditors or audits, and then a new auditor is required to visit the site.
Okay. So, you know, with some of those changes too, you know, I have heard of facilities that have passed their GFSI audits, you know, with flying colors. They've gotten great scores for years, and then all of a sudden they get some real significant non-conformances. Why might that happen?
Yeah, so as we previously mentioned, every auditor is different. They see different issues, they have different experiences, and they focus on different aspects. And so this could certainly contribute to audit performance. But there are also good auditors and bad auditors. And if you get into a cycle with one or the other, this certainly could contribute to audit score. I once sat through an audit where the auditor showed up 2 hours late, wasn't sure which standard they were auditing, and by the end of the second day had made it through maybe half of the standard that we were being certified to. And then the auditor asked the facility if anything had changed from the previous year and then left without reviewing half the programs.
Oh, goodness.
That facility did really well on their audit, but the reality is they weren't really audited. And so a new auditor who comes in and completes the proper audit requirements, it may result in a much lower grade for a facility that's been through that type of audit in the past. I also think companies can get a little bit complacent. Sometimes you have audits that go really well. There are very few issues. You don't really have any challenges against those measures. And then, you know, maybe as a result of that, you're not working on your programs as much as you should be. You're not really driving that continuous improvement. But I mean, there could also have been changes within your QA team, your management teams, your facilities that result in changes to the audit results and a score that's less than what you were expecting. So it's really important to keep up on changes to the standard. And when new issues are released and coming into effect, make sure that you are aware of those changes. Failing to meet new requirements could certainly result in a reduced audit performance. But keep in mind, the auditors truly want you and your facility to do well. But if there are issues that are noted as potential food safety risks, they do need to be called out.
So, you know, given how those changes can occur and all that, we did talk in the previous episode about how facility can conduct internal audits and work with external consultants to help them prepare for an audit. So is this still a good strategy once the company is certified?
Absolutely. I think it's always a good idea to get a new set of fresh eyes in your facility. I think this helps to eliminate, or I think this helps with some of those elements or requirements that we become blind. So we see them day in and day out. We work with them all the time, but we don't necessarily see the specific elements that are required for certification. Just because we've had a program that's been running 1 year or one way for 10 years doesn't necessarily mean there's a better way to do it or that there's not issues with compliance that could become nonconformances in the future. Everything with GFSI is in the name of continuous improvement and making safe food. So bringing in an outside expert is a way to drive that continuous improvement criteria. And TAG can certainly support in this respect. We have a number of GFSI experts and auditors who can review programs or complete internal audits for facility to help provide that internal perspective or external perspective.
So that's great. A lot of tips, a lot of detail on just the overall GFSI experience. And I think if people watch the previous episode or listen on the podcast and then this episode, you're going to get a really good feel for what it takes to be GFSI certified and even why that's important both for your own business and for anybody that is requiring it of you. But before we go, Kate, are there any other tips that you would have to help the GFSI certified facilities be sure that they are staying in compliance and are ready for audits?
Sure. So I would suggest really focusing on that internal audit. A robust internal audit program should be finding the issues that exist within your facility before the auditor finds them. Make sure that you're keeping up to date with what the standard requirements are. Make sure that you know when changes are being implemented. Be on those email lists and keep up to date on when changes are happening, new versions are being released, and when addendums are issued. Each standard also offers training courses geared towards successful implementation and management of the standard. Use those courses, participate in them, do everything you can that allows for professional development opportunities. Keep up to date on changes in the industry and changes within your regulatory bodies to ensure you're one step ahead and prepared for when these changes are implemented. And please feel free to reach out to see how a TAG member can support your facility in its ongoing GFSI journey.
All right. So once again, Kate, I'd really like to thank you for sharing your expertise on GFSI and providing some great tips on how to manage this ongoing journey. And for all our viewers and listeners, if you did miss the episode called Thinking About Taking a GFSI Certification Journey, here's what you need to know. Click on it now for more sage advice on getting started. And to be sure you don't miss any episodes of TAG Talks Food Safety, be sure to like, follow, or subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. Thanks again.